Hello everybody, you're listening to Osho Radio. The discourse today is from the series This Very Body, the Buddha, number 8. Just imagine we were living in a healthy society. How would the relationship between man and woman be? Osho is talking about the tantric experience. What is tantric sex? He very clearly indicates it's not about techniques at all. Just play and dance and sing and laugh together and let sex be a natural thing. Sometimes it will be there and sometimes it's not. But in the end, whatever happens, you see it happening and it's all about awareness.
The second question, what is tantric sex? It is good you will be meditating on tantra and tantra sex, because sex is also a small death, and because of that small death in sex, there is so much release of joy in you. For a single moment, you disappear. And that moment is the climax, the orgasm. In that single moment, you don't know who you are. In that single moment, you are pure energy vibrating, pulsating, with no center to it, with no ego in it. In that single moment of orgasmic space, you lose all boundaries, separation. You become vast, huge. You are no more separate from the other. That's why there is so much joy, although the moment is very small. And once it is gone, you feel very frustrated, because it has been so sad. It was so fleeting. And you start hankering again. And each time that moment comes, you reach to a pinnacle, and then you fall into a deep darkness, into the abyss. So sex brings you joy, and sex brings you great misery too. It takes you to sunlit peaks, and then drops you into the darkest valleys. After each sex act, one feels frustrated. Something was happening, and it happened, and you could not catch even hold of it, and it was gone. So sex remains the greatest fascination and the greatest frustration. Because of these two things in the act of sex, there are two types of people. Those who become too much fascinated with the fascination, addicted with sex, they are the people who go on indulging in all kinds of sexualities, and their whole life is nothing but search for more sex, better sex. And the other who become addicted with the frustration of sex, they renounce the world, the woman, the man, they escape to the Himalayas or in the monasteries. But both have reacted to sex. Your worldly and your otherworldly, they are not different. They both are sexual. They have chosen one part of the sex act. They have chosen opposite parts, but they have chosen out of the sex act. That's why your so-called religions are so much against sex. They have chosen the frustration part. The indulgent and the renunciate are two aspects of the same coin. They are not different people. They are the same people. And both have chosen out of sex. Tantra is a totally different attitude. It says there is joy in sex and there is frustration in sex. Because the moment of orgasm is very small. That moment can become very deep. That moment can remain there for hours. That moment, once you know the art of remaining in it, can surround you 24 hours. Tantra transforms sex. Tantra is the true religion. It does not choose between the fascination and the frustration. It transcends both. It uses sex as a key, and it is a key, because all life comes through it, all flowers bloom through it, and all birds sing through it. All that you see around you, the green and the red and the gold, all comes through sex and is sex energy. All the poetry and all the songs and all the music is rooted in sex energy. All art, all creativity, is nothing but expressions of sex. So tantra sex has to be understood. Few things. The tantric definition of sexuality is opposite to the modern definition. The modern mind regards sex as a need, like hunger for food, which incidentally provides sense and ego gratification. That's how Freud thinks about sex, that it gives you ego gratification, satisfaction, relaxation. It relieves tensions. It is a need. The Tantra regards sex as a powerful, instinctual return to our ultimate reality, one of the highest forms of meditation. There you have to understand the first thing to remember. Freud does not understand sex ultimate depth. Freud has only looked into the repressed sexuality of man. What Christianity has done in the West, the wrong, Freud was trying to put it right. But Christianity remains superficial, and Freud remains superficial. Why? Because the cure cannot go deeper than the disease. The disease was superficial. The cure cannot be deeper than that. Tantra does not define sex as a need. It is not. A man can live without sex. It is not a need. Not like food. You cannot survive without food. It is not like thirst. You cannot survive without water. But you can survive easily without sex. Maybe you can survive longer. Sex is not a need like food or thirst or hunger. Sex has a definitely total dimension, a different dimension altogether. It is a way to contact the ultimate reality. It is an urge to move to the original source. In ordinary sex, it happens only for moments. Even that is rare, because there are very few orgasmic persons left in the world. People have become so much civilized that to be orgasmic seems impossible. A civilized person cannot be orgasmic because he cannot allow himself to be wild. Only a wild person can be orgasmic, because orgasm is wild. The better you are civilized, the better you are cultured, sophisticated, educated, the less is the possibility for you to be orgasmic. Then sex is just a relief. It is like sneezing. Nothing much. It is sheer wastage. You accumulate energy and you don't know what to do with your energy. And the energy becomes heavy on you. It has to be thrown out in some way or other. So you go on throwing the energy. But you have lost the language of orgasm. What is the language of orgasm? If you are really orgasmic, you will groan and moan and shout and sing and pray. And thousand and one things will happen when you are making love to your woman or to your man. It is going to be a mad thing. and that is difficult in a civilized world. The whole neighborhood will know that now you are making love, and the people will start phoning the police station that there is danger, one person is gone orgasmic. Yes, you will dance, you will sing, you will utter incoherent sounds, gibberish will come. One never knows what will happen, because you lose control. To be orgasmic means capacity to lose control. The constant control is there. You are simply sitting on your energies, controlling them. This should be, this should not be, this is right, that is wrong. You are continuously doing that, inhibiting, repressing. Only go so far, beyond that is danger. Only this much is allowed. How can you be orgasmic? And if you are not orgasmic in other things, you cannot be orgasmic in sex. If in your anger you control, then you cannot be orgasmic in sex. If you can be orgasmic in anger, only then you can be orgasmic in sex. Man is a totality. If you cannot get into a rage, how can you get into love? Impossible. Have you watched it? Knowingly, unknowingly, couples stumble upon the fact that if they want to make love, it is a must that they should fight before they make love. So each evening couples fight, become angry. That becomes a little help. A pillow fight is helpful. Your energies start moving. Your juice starts flowing. And you, if you can be a little silly and stupid in anger, then you can be silly and stupid in love too. Then who cares? A natural man is orgasmic in all his emotions. Somebody has asked a question that if people become authentic, as you say they should become authentic and natural, and if they don't smile, because a smile is phony, and if they go on screaming and shouting in the streets, what will happen to the world? Many things will happen to the world. First, wars will become impossible. There will be no Vietnams and no Israels, because people will never accumulate that much anger in them that they have to kill and kill millions. Many things will happen to the world if people are natural. Then they will not shout so much as you think they will shout. Right now, if they are allowed to shout, they will shout. But how long? If they are given complete freedom, shouts and abusing and condemnation and fights will start disappearing from the world. It is a vicious circle. It is as if you have been starving a person and you don't allow him to go close to the freeze. And you say, if we allow him, he will eat too much. And you have been starving him. And now you are afraid if you allow him any freedom, he will eat too much, he will fall ill. So you don't allow him to come to the freeze. He has to live by his quota. Whatever you give, he has to live. Now he fantasizes, he dreams what to do. How to reach to the freeze? How to eat more? His whole imagination becomes focused on food. He dreams of food. A famous Sufi story says, three persons were traveling. They purchased a Sufi sweet halwa, but they had not enough money and the halwa was very costly. It was not enough for three. So there was great debate who should eat it. They decided that we should do one thing. We all should sleep, and in the morning, whosoever has dreamt the best dream, he will be the person to eat it all. Agreed, they fell asleep. Early morning, they related their dreams. One said he was a Christian. He said, I dreamt of Jesus. And Jesus said, come to heaven. I have prepared the place for you. And he was calling me, inviting me. It was such a beautiful dream. I have never dreamt such a thing. And Jesus was so radiant. And I feel so good that I have been accepted by Jesus. The second was a Hindu. He said, this is nothing. I dreamt I have become Krishna. And thousands of gopis dancing around me, beautiful damsels, and I am playing on the flute. It was such a beautiful dream. And the third was a Mohammedan Sufi, and they asked, what about you? He said, Muhammad appeared and said, you fool, what are you doing here? Go and eat the halwa. So I have eaten it. Because how can you reject when Muhammad commands? If you are hungry, if you are kept starving, then the fear arises that if you are left loose in the streets, you may enter into a restaurant, kill the owner, or do something. But if you are well fed, then nobody does anything like that. This is what has happened. For thousands of years you have been repressed. You have been made more and more phony. Now the fear arises. The questioner is right. The fear arises if people become authentic and start screaming and shouting and doing things the way they always wanted to do and were never allowed to do. The world will go mad. Yes, for few years the world will go mad, but that madness will be therapeutic. It will help immensely. After that, nobody will go mad ever. Neurosis will disappear. Psychosis will disappear. Wars will disappear. Politicians will become meaningless. Nations and the militaries and the armies will become irrelevant. They will not be needed. That's why the politician and the priest are so much in favor of repressing people, because they depend on these repressions. Wars will not be there. Generals won't like it. Army people won't like it. If there is no Vietnam, then their whole purpose is lost. If there are no nations, then what is the point of having prime ministers and presidents? They are irrelevant. Government becomes irrelevant if people are natural. Less and less government will be needed. So many people have investments, and their fear looks right, logical, because for so many centuries man has been repressed, that they are afraid that things may explode. Yes, for few years, for one generation at least there will be great explosion. Then things will disappear. Bertrand Russell has written that when he was a child, even legs of chairs were covered with cloth. Legs, because they look sexual. And he says, I had not seen any legs of a woman. The garments had to be so long that you cannot see. And Bertrand Russell says, in those days, people used to fantasize about legs, dream about legs. Even a dream about a leg was enough excitement and ecstasy. Now nobody bothers about the legs. Once you have seen men and women naked, you stop worrying about, dreaming about their nakedness. Dreams change. The world needs to be more natural. Then there will be less anxiety, less fear, less worry. But for a generation, there will be great explosion. After that, things will settle. We have to take that risk. That risk can only save humanity. Otherwise, everybody is going mad. Tantra attitude about sex is that sex is not a need. It is a cosmic experience. It is an experience of meditation. It is an instinctual return to our ultimate reality, one of the highest forms of meditation. In 15 minutes to an hour or more of uninterrupted quietus, the Tantra seeks a complete loss of the ego. Just see the difference. Freud says it is a gratification for the ego. And that's how it has become. And Freud is not wrong. If you see the modern man, he is right. People go on making love just to prove that they are males, are females, are charming people they are, beautiful people they are. People go on finding new women, new men, just to prove that I am still attractive. My observation of people is that they don't fall in love. Their joy is not love. Their joy is conquest. Once they have achieved a woman, they are no more interested in her. It is not love. Now they are seeking new pasture. Now they want new woman. Now they want to prove again that they are still young, looked at, they have still charisma, magnetism. And the more women they can make love with, the more their ego is satisfied. This is not love. And Freud is right that sex gives ego gratification. But look at Tantra. Tantra has a totally different idea. Tantra says the appeal of sex is because it gives you a moment of egolessness, timelessness, meditation. Because of ego gratification, sex has become very, very superficial. It only scratches the skin. It does not go deep. It has no depth. So many people are worried about premature ejaculation. The reason? they don't love. If they love, then naturally they can make love for longer periods. The more you are in love, the period will be longer. For hours you can be in love, because there is no hurry. The ego is not controlling. In a tantra coitus, you can remain for hours. It is a kind of melting with the woman or with the man. It is a kind of relaxation into each other's being. And it is meditative, because there is no ego. No thought stirs. And time stops. This is a glimpse of God. Tantra is the natural way to God, the normal way to God. The object is to become so completely instinctual, so mindless, that we merge with ultimate nature. That the woman disappears and becomes a door for the ultimate. The man disappears and becomes a door for the ultimate. This is the tantra definition of our sexuality, the return to absolute innocence, absolute oneness. The greatest sexual thrill of all is no search for thrills, but a silent waiting, utterly relaxed, utterly mindless. One is conscious, conscious only of being conscious. One is consciousness. One is contented, but there is no content to it. And then there is great beauty, great benediction. How to imbibe real tantra? You will have to transform your whole approach. Pray with your woman. Sing with your woman. Play with your woman. Dance with your woman, with no idea of sex. Don't go on thinking when we are going to bed. Forget about it. Do something else and get lost into it. And someday love will arise out of that being lost. Suddenly you will see that you are making love and you are not making it. It is happening. You are possessed by it. Then you have your first tantra experience. Possessed by something bigger than you. You were dancing. Or you were singing together. Or you were chanting together. Or you were praying together. Or meditating together. And suddenly you find you both have moved in a new space. And when you have started making love, you don't know. You don't remember either. Then you are being possessed by tantra energy. Don't control. Go in uncontrol. Go in chaos. It will be fearful, frightening, because it will be a kind of death. And the mind will say control, and the mind will say jump in and keep control, otherwise you will be lost in the abyss of it. Don't listen to the mind, get lost. Abandon yourself utterly. And without any technique, you will come to see a timeless experience. There will be no two in it. Oneness. A consciousness will be there, a lucid, passive consciousness will be there. You will know what is happening, because you will be fully aware. But you will not be there. Awareness will be there. Thank you.
After this beautiful discourse, we're going to play some music that's coming from a site called Sufi Music. It shows the pictures of the celebration after Osho left his body on January 19th, 1990.
ਸਮਝਾਵਾਂ ਕਿ ਨਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਾਜੋਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਜੀ ਮੈਂ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਸਮਝਾਵਾਂ ਕਿ ਨਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਾਜੋਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਜੀ ਤੂੰ ਕੀ ਜਾਣੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਮੇਰਾ ਮੈਂ ਕਰਾਂ ਇੰਤਜ਼ਾਰ ਤੇਰਾ ਤੂੰ ਦਿਲ ਤੂੰ ਯੋ ਜਾਨ ਮੇਰੀ ਮੈਂ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਸਮਝਾਵਾਂ ਕਿ ਨਾ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਾਜੋਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਜੀ ਹਾਏ ਤੂੰ ਕੀ ਜਾਣੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਮੇਰਾ ਮੈਂ ਕਰਾਂ ਇੰਤਜ਼ਾਰ ਤੇਰਾ ਤੂੰ ਦਿਲ ਤੂੰ ਯੋ ਜਾਨ ਮੇਰੀ ਮੈਂ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਸਮਝਾਂ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਾਜੋਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਜੀ ਤੇਰੇ ਬਾਜੋਂ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਜੀ
In this program, you are listening to music by Satkyan, Milarepa, and Praful playing a saxophone before and after the discourse. This was Osho Radio for today. We hope you enjoyed the program, and we're going to finish with some dancing music played by Ashik, who'd made a CD called Gypsy Heart. Maybe some of you will recognize the next tune. Goodbye, everybody. Take care. Have a wonderful week. And until the next time. Namaste.